Number six, please. The United States versus Rumasevich.
May it please the court, your honors. My name is Matthew McQuaid. I'm arguing on behalf of the appellant, Peter Rumasevich, who after a trial was found guilty of 5 counts of mail fraud and 2 counts of perjury, was sentenced to 75 months imprisonment, ordered to pay $571,000 in change in restitution. And at his sentencing hearing, the district court imposed a 2-level enhancement of Rumasevich's offense level for vulnerable victim and another 2-level enhancement for the abuse of trust enhancement in the sentencing guidelines. It's Rumasevich's contention, Your Honor, that the vulnerable victim enhancement did not apply to these victims in this particular case. The district court in its ruling indicated that he felt the vulnerable victim enhancement should apply because this defendant, after soliciting potential investors to come to a seminar and then ultimately gaining personal financial information about these particular victims, was unable to use that information, exploit that information for his own benefit. And he also
isn't that exactly what the district court did? I mean, it looked to me like what he was doing is he's obviously looking at the, you know, other circumstances part of the vulnerable victim guideline, and he is looking at a very fact-specific level at the way Mr. Rumasevich selected his targets. And as I understand it, he'd have these seminars at places like the Arlington Heights Public Library, get these people to write down all sorts of detailed financial information about themselves, personal information, and then he invited some of them to come to his office. So he was really cherry-picking through these folks, wasn't he, to see who would be the vulnerable target?
Your Honor, with regards to the court's finding, I don't see anything in the record that would allow me to argue the fact that that was incorrect. I think the basis of my argument is this, is that the vulnerable victim enhancement is to take the victims as they are, to punish the defendant for victimizing unusually vulnerable people. And in this case, what the court has found is that Rumasevich is acting in a certain way towards certain people, that he's basically abusing their trust. He brings them in, he speaks to them, they become confident, they like him, and then he takes advantage of that.
I think he's saying two different things. I mean, that is, of course, one of the things we need to sort out. There is a trust aspect, but you could abuse a position of trust vis-a-vis the most sophisticated person in the world if that person had reposed trust in you. And similarly, you could try to figure out who was going to be the most vulnerable to your pitch. They're probably going to trust you also, but you've tried to find these people who are maybe at the verge of retirement, they're elderly, they're insecure about how to deal with financial markets or what have you, whatever the vulnerability may be, and go after them because you think they're going to be an easy mark.
I think that's inherent in all fraud cases, Your Honor, and I think what the facts of these 10 particular victims that is presented in this case is that they're not unsophisticated, that they have some financial wherewithal. They're not complete innocents when it comes to investments. And every single one of these particular victims hasn't poured his entire life savings into Peter Rumasevich's, you know, bogus bonds. He's basically, I think some of the cases talk about, when you talk about a fraud situation, you're talking about a lower than average ability for victims. I think what I'm trying to say is that these particular victims are average to, I would argue, above average when it comes to financial wherewithal.
Are you saying then that because someone has money that this vulnerable victim guideline can never apply?
No, Your Honor. I think what I'm trying to say is that my argument is that Rumasevich acted in a certain way, possibly to make his victims more vulnerable, that it was his actions, which he's being punished for in the offense level in and of itself for fraud, for acting in a deceitful way and luring these people in. And I think that's what he's done. So you're punishing what he's doing. When you punish what he does when he abuses their trust, when he brings them in, but you take these victims as they are, as they come to him. I've kind of tried to rehash this over in my mind, that he's making them more vulnerable by what he's doing, by his personality, by what he says or how he says it. I don't think these victims, on the facts, taken as they are what the sentencing guidelines want when they want to punish a defendant for taking advantage of a vulnerable victim.
Someone is knowledgeable that believes that this bond is going to compound at 12% interest in 6 years? Do you honestly believe that yourself?
I don't say they're knowledgeable, Your Honor, but I don't say that they're below average to be
even the average person is going to believe that. They better buy the bridge then at the same time.
I understand your point, Your Honor, and I can't say that it's deceitful, and that's what he's doing. But I think that what you're saying is that they're more vulnerable than that needs a greater societal protection. And that's what the sentencing guideline calls for. And I think that what the court did in this case was basically use the same rationale that they used to find abuse of trust, to find that they're vulnerable victims, and that's, in essence, why the double counting argument comes in. But my point is that the facts of this case don't support a vulnerable victim. The government tries to say that they're elderly, that they're unsophisticated, that they're retired or about to retire, and that in and of itself makes them vulnerable to Rums of Vicious Assurances. I don't think age as a whole is not, there's no evidence that their age has any effect on how they behave. I don't think that they are unsophisticated. If the court
you
can find...
You don't think what?
They're unsophisticated.
Then they would believe that theory of 12% in 6 years.
They believed it because they trusted him into what they were doing, and that they believed him. They believed Rumsevich because he brought them in. He gained their trust and abused.
In other
their
words,
trust.
He only went out for those that he thought that he could convince.
So, in terms of the language of the comment to the guidelines, your argument has to be that being unusually vulnerable due to age, physical or mental condition, or who's otherwise particularly susceptible. Mental condition, in your view, would mean a true mental disability, like a low IQ, not lack of sophistication.
I'm arguing an infirmity, a mental infirmity.
A mental infirmity. This language here, right. And it says, would apply in a fraud case in which the defendant marketed an ineffective cancer cure, or in a robbery in which the defendant selected a handicapped victim. So your argument is just lack of financial savvy isn't what this is getting at.
In and of itself, no, it's not enough. And I'm sorry, you asked another question, Judge, and I didn't answer it. Okay.
So you're not disputing, though, what the government has said factually about these particular victims, that is, that some were close to retirement, that some were widows where the husband used to handle the money. You're not disputing those factual descriptions of the victim.
I would just dispute the fact that there was one widow, not widows, plural, and taking her as a whole, not just knocking out each individual, not just saying that elderly doesn't apply to this person, mm-hmm. therefore they're not vulnerable, but I'm encouraging taking them as a whole. That's what the guidelines want you to do. Take each victim as a whole. The facts don't support what the cases talk about when it comes to vulnerable victims. And I don't make it a sweeping. They don't have to be have a mental infirmity. I'm not saying sweeping. That's the only way. But I'm saying that if you look at the cases regarding financial fraud and things of this nature, they don't rise to the level where these victims are at. And I don't believe that these victims, taking as they are vulnerable. And I don't dispute the factual findings that the government makes in the record about the individual people, Your Honor. I just don't think what the facts say rise to the level of vulnerable according to the guidelines.
And you don't think him targeting them after he got this financial information?
I don't believe I believe he took them. He whoever was going to believe what he had to say, he took them in. And I don't believe he targeted it. And I don't believe he targeted any of them specifically. I think he invited them all to come to see him at his office. and to discuss further financial investments.
But he invited everybody who filled out the form to come to his office?
I think he invited, the form was for the seminars. And I think at the seminars he spoke of they went to meet him later at his office. And I believe
all of them or just...
No, just particular
But then
victims.
They all, when they came to the seminar, they filled out the paperwork.
I believe they did, yeah.
Right, everybody.
Everyone.
Came to the seminar.
So he had that information ahead of time. That is correct.
Right, and then he identified those that he wanted to invite to his office. True. I mean, they didn't say, you know, they filled out the form and then on their own accord they came to his office. He identified people to invite to his office.
I'm not completely clear on that issue, Your Honor, and maybe the government can clear it up for you, but I believe that he would have taken whoever came in. I don't dispute that. I don't dispute that. And if they had to come in to talk to him about a particular investment, he would have done so.
Or did he cherry pick those who, as Judge Wood said, that he wanted to come to the office?
I believe that there's some evidence that he did take as much money as each of one of them had. He did particularly prey upon them and victimize them, and I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that, and he's never disputed that he abused their trust and he shouldn't be punished for what he did. But what I'm saying is that he shouldn't be punished for these particular victims as they are under the guidelines.
Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. As to the second issue, which counsel has raised in oral argument, I think it's pretty clear that he was cherry-picking. It's clear, as Judge Williams, you've indicated, there is some evidence that the people, there is absolutely clear evidence that all of the victims who testified at trial were called back in the manner that you're suggesting. They fill out the form at these seminars of the public libraries, and a week or two later, lo and behold, Mr. Rumsevich calls them, and they come back to his office for further debriefing. I think even more revealing about this issue of cherry-picking is, as counsel has suggested, these were not, for a whole host of reasons, zero coupon bonds. They were 6-year loans, basically. And one of the reasons why they weren't zero coupon bonds is because oftentimes you would find a zero coupon bond would be for, say, $10,000 or $20,000 or $5,000 or whatever. What these were 6-year loans for however much a victim had, which again indicates, I think, and suggests some cherry picking that's going on here. The defendant's counsel talks about how these victims were not unsophisticated. They hadn't poured their entire life savings into this fraudulent scheme. In fact, of course, those are factual findings, and the district court is properly able to make those findings. But defense counsel's argument is simply wrong. Several of these victims did pour what amounted to their life savings, the play cards, as an example. One of whom poured in, I believe, $84,000, another of whom bought these bonds for approximately $47,000. That was the absolute amount that they had in their retirement savings account after working for many years at Illinois Tool Works. So it was, in essence, their life savings.
But Mr. Porter, the thing that worries me, and we've been here before with vulnerable victims, is that we know under the structure of the guidelines it has to mean something different from simply the fact that you fell for the fraud, because the fraud guideline already has a punishment structure for people who defraud other people. And so we need to know what's that extra, and the examples that are given in the application notes are pretty, I'll say, objective criteria. You know, you're really old or you have physical handicaps, like the example of the robbery where the defendant selects somebody who's not able to run away quickly or what have you. And it's hard for me to see what that concrete line is here, other than, you know, simple lack of financial sophistication. But that's going to be true in such a high percentage of the fraud cases anyway, that I'm afraid we haven't distinguished between what's the basic guideline and what's the enhancement.
I think, Your Honor, and if I may in beginning, I think it's certainly fair to say that if any of the people in this room, might I say, were victims of the defendant, we wouldn't qualify for a vulnerable victim because of other sophistication that we have. There might certainly be an abuse of trust, given his position vis-a-vis us, but there probably wouldn't be a vulnerable victim, and the government wouldn't seek that enhancement. But in this, what we do is we look at the cases. We look at the past precedent, and many of these individuals meet that. And I think that this court in the Perolin case, if I'm saying that correctly, may have said it best in terms of seeking a standard, which I think is where your question goes. And what they said was, and in that case, we had a couple of women in their 60s, not 80s or 90s or infirm or anything. They were widows, and they had relied on their husbands for the financial part of the relationship. Exactly what we have here.
Although the district court didn't make specific findings on individuals, the court just has a general sort of gloms everybody into one category, and it's hard for us to discern which specific victims he's referring to.
That is fair to say. There was a very lengthy sentencing hearing. There were numerous enhancements that were argued. Loss amount was argued, and could the district court have done a little bit better job in terms of pinpointing exactly? Probably, but I think we can look at the record independently and say, you know what, he got it right. But what the Perillon case says is where the victims are lower than average ability to protect themselves. And I think that's as good a test as any. Defense counsel in his brief, although he sort of backed away from it here, in his brief talks about, well, there's got to be a mental or physical infirmity for the victim, vulnerable victim to apply. And in these cases, in the Perillon case, in the Stewart case, in other cases that we've cited, clearly we don't have that. We've got victims like the victims here, elderly, unsophisticated, clearly unsophisticated, depending on others and the defendants having targeted them and reaching out to them. Those are the sorts of victims where this enhancement applies, and that's what we have here. And so when we ask the question, did they have lower than average ability to protect themselves, I think clearly they did, and clearly the district court found that. And I think that's what he was talking about when he said, talking about them going to the seminars, talking about how they were dependent on his and trusting in him.
I have to say, Mr. Rumsevich seems to have snookered the public library managers of the northwestern suburbs as well, because I know they run all sorts of nice programs, and he seems to have, with these wild titles, gotten himself, I don't know if they're vulnerable victims too, but these are people who like run the libraries up there.
it was part of what he was doing, obviously. It was sort of a roadshow as he was going through the northwest suburbs, Your Honor. For all the reasons I've stated, we would submit that the district court did not err at all, certainly didn't commit clear error in making the enhancement. And in terms of the first issue, we obviously just rest on our briefs. We think this is prototypical Lowland correspondence and was properly charged, and the jury certainly had sufficient evidence to find as it did. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the case under advisement. Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m.